Welcome to Dispatches, the official podcast for the Journal of the American Revolution. The Journal of the American Revolution publishes weekly online at www.allthingsliberty.com. For the latest in research, reviews, and commentaries, America's most important history is available free of charge at the Journal of the American Revolution.
These guys who were sitting in whaleboats on the Connecticut side said, let's go steal it because it can't move to get away from us. And we obviously we're all rowing. So we can just row across the Sound and steal this sloop.
That's Journal of the American Revolution contributor Selden West discussing a whaleboat war off the coast of Stamford, Connecticut. And she's our guest today. I'm Brady Kreitzer, and this is Dispatches. This episode is sponsored by the Small Battle series, with two new releases, The Battle of Musgrove's Mill, 1782, by John Buchanan, and The Battle of Harlem Heights, 1776, by David Price. Available now wherever books are sold. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Dispatches. I'm your host, Brady Kreitzer. Today our guest is Journal of the American Revolution contributor Selden West, and she'll be discussing a whaleboat war off the coast of Stamford, Connecticut. Hopefully everyone knows by now that when you study the American Revolution, you're really studying many small wars at once. There are partisan wars on the frontier, that's what I study. There are the big battles in New York, New Jersey, and Boston. There's the guerrilla Southern campaigns in places like South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Virginia. But then there's also the whaleboat wars, and we'll see these off the coast of Long Island in 1778. The whaleboat wars are their own small conflict within a conflict, but like any war, they have beginnings, middles, and ends. They have preludes to the greater conflicts. And Selden West has provided us a detailed explanation of one of those today. And get this, it involves a solar eclipse. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our interview with Selden West. Selden West, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Selden, you've been on the show before. Remind us about your background.
I'm a retired U.S. history teacher, and I've had a lifelong interest in the revolution and have done a lot of research into southwestern Connecticut during the war. And I've just been fascinated since I grew up there. I heard sort of the patriot side, and now there are so many archives that can be explored remotely that I've gotten a much fuller picture, and it's been fascinating to me. So this story grew out of one of those little research forays where I started looking into it and found a lot of different sources, and I thought it was fascinating.
What first drew your interest into this topic?
Because I was reading, to be honest, I was reading about this battle, which took place right outside Stamford Harbor. And I was lucky enough to read the muster book for the Falcon, which transported the prisoners from Stamford to New York City. And I saw names that I recognized from Darien and Norwalk and places. Because I've researched this whole area of Connecticut, I recognize many of the names after years of reading about this. And so I thought, wow, this is a really interesting story that has never been told. And it was also, it was a somewhat humorous story.
Selden, talk about the whaleboat. What made it special?
What made whaleboats so special? There actually were not, before the war, many whaleboats in Long Island Sound. there are not a lot of whales in Long Island Sound. It wasn't a big industry, but what made them so useful during the Revolution was that they were relatively lightweight. I mean, not that a half-ton boat is lightweight, but compared to many boats, they were incredibly versatile. They could be used with, they could be rowed, or they could be used with a sail. They obviously could go in very shallow water, which on both sides of the Sound, but particularly on the Connecticut side, there were so many little tiny coves that a whaleboat could go in that no other vessel could go in. And so they were great for spying, for raiding, for all sorts of things. And then you could take your boat and you'd have, you know, 5 to 8 men in that boat. And the men could then pick up the boat on the beach, carry it up and hide it in the shrubbery. So it was sort of ideally suited for the raids and counter raids that happened throughout the war across Long Island Sound.
Could you describe how a small sloop was seen off of Long Island Sound? What was it doing there and why were people concerned?
Okay, so what happens is that there is it's a dead calm day. It's very early on a hot June morning, and some men are on the Connecticut side. And if you know Long Island Sound, you know that you can, on a clear day, you can see from Connecticut to Long Island, not distinctly. So they must have had a spyglass and have been looking through a spyglass. But against the cliff of a point called Lloyd's Neck, against those sand cliffs, they saw a small sloop sitting there, becalmed, meaning it was not able to move because there was no wind. And it was all alone. Now, you need to understand that at that time, the British needed so much wood for fuel. They were cutting wood on Long Island Sound, and they needed the wood in New York City. They were cutting wood on Long Island, and they needed the wood in New York City. So what they did was have little fleets of sloops, of small sloops and schooners, which were, they were kind of the equivalent of what today would be sort of beater trucks. You know, they were not high value vessels. They loaded them with wood, and then they would take an armed ship to sort of convoy all of these sloops loaded with firewood to New York City. So here was a wood sloop. It's a low value thing, but it was sitting there, and these guys who were sitting in whaleboats on the Connecticut side said, "Let's go steal it because it can't move to get away from us. And we obviously we're all rowing. So we can just row across the Sound and steal this sloop. What a great idea." And that's what they decided to do. And it was a completely nutty idea because they could see there were 6 large armed British ships nearby within a 5-mile stretch. But they made the gamble that, okay, those ships, they're not going to see us until we're very close, and they won't have the wind to catch us. So we can just dart in there and steal that sloop and tow it away. It was a completely dumb idea.
Selden, could you take us through the main event of your article?
Well, so you have to understand, even with 8 men rowing, it's going to take you a couple of hours to row the 15 miles across Long Island Sound. So they are spotted when they're about to take this sloop. And so the Diligent brig, which has like 10 cannons on it, fires 2 cannons to alert all the other large ships in the area. And the Raven sloop of war fires its cannons in response to sort of say, yes, we hear, there's an alarm. And at this alarm from these two large armed ships, every armed ship in the area puts out its boats with Marines in them, rowing to catch our Connecticut whale boatmen. And Loyalists come boiling out of the harbor who have been on land at Lloyd's Neck. So suddenly these guys, they see all of these ships, boats being manned, and still they continue on and they take the sloop and they start towing it away. It was complete madness. It was sort of youthful daredevil. You know, it was a silly thing to do. The account Thomas Painter gives is hilarious because he tells it with a straight. Thomas Painter was 18 years old at the time. He was one of the Connecticut boys in the whale boats, and he left a wonderful account of it, saying, yes, we heard the cannons, we saw them manning their boats, and still we continued on and took the sloop and started towing her away. And so it was, you know, they raced to take this. Yet what you have to understand is this wood sloop was very low value. I mean, it was like it was just a prize to them. They were stealing something that, you know, I mean, they could certainly sell it, but they wouldn't be selling it for a lot of money. So, and they were risking their lives. So it was sort of a game of chicken or something like that. But that's what they did. They all ran over and rowed over and took the sloop and headed back. And they had 18 British boats rowing madly after them. And the diligent brig didn't have any wind, but it managed to turn and fired its cannons at them. And it was sort of a mad scene. But they were committed now. So they had to get away and they were towing this sloop and each of the boats had put a couple of men up on the wood sloop. The wood sloop had some swivel guns, which fire, it's kind of a mini cannon. So they were firing at the British boats that were chasing them. So then it became sort of like it certainly wasn't a comedy because they were all firing deadly things, but it was just a race back across the Sound to the safety of Connecticut. And what they didn't realize is that the sky was getting darker. And what they didn't realize is that it was the beginning of a solar eclipse. And right when they got to right outside Stamford Harbor, there was obviously had been, that is when the 18 boats started to catch up and the firing became very intense between the two. The five boats are towing the wood sloop away, which the wood sloop is firing at these 18 British boats that are chasing. The 18 British boats are firing muskets. And so as they finally catch up outside Stamford Harbor, two small vessels, which are in the harbor, come out to try to help Connecticut whale boats, and they sail out, and you know, because there's no wind, they can hardly move, but they have a bunch more cannons. So for a while it's a crazy fight, and this is right when the eclipse happens. It's so dark that someone was trying to see from Fairfield what was happening. They were watching with a spyglass and it was too dark to see anything that was happening. And that was about 10 a.m. And eventually what happened is the British boats, the 18 British boats, you know, when the ships came out of this, you know, sloop and schooner came out of Stamford Harbor, the 18 boats sort of backed off, but then they came racing up again. And at this point, the Connecticut whale boats panicked and they cut the tow lines. Well, the wood sloop, the only way it could move was being towed. And so it was now dead in the water. And so suddenly they were surrounded by these British boats, and the men on the wood sloop, whoever was left in the last Connecticut whale boat, and anyone who was still on the sloop and schooner that had come out of Stamford, all of those men were all captured. And so it was really a very ignominious end for what had started out sort of as a lark. Hey guys, let's run, you know, it seemed like a good idea. Let's just dash across there and steal that sloop. And instead, it appears that at least two men were killed and 23 men were captured.
Selden, what happened to the men that were involved in this attack?
They were taken to New York, and they were put on a brand new prison ship called the Good Hope. It was fun for me to learn a lot about prison ships. They were very lucky because the Good Hope had just 2 weeks earlier become a prison ship. So it was not, prison ships rightly have a terrible reputation, but people had been dying at horrible rates earlier that summer, and the Good Hope was one of the ships that was bought to relieve sort of the crowded conditions. So they were lucky in that they got into a much larger ship that was not crammed with people dying of disease. And then they were, Thomas Painter, who left his journal, came up with a brilliant plan for how they would escape.
Selden, could you talk about the way these men escaped from their imprisonment?
Yes, actually, Thomas was the only one who ended up escaping, but it appears they all tried. He told two different versions of it. One, he just conspired with his own captain, who had been in his whaleboat with him. But in his pension application, he talked about having made the plan with a number of the young men that he was captured with. But the plan was simple. They were given a very small measure of rum. Each man was given a very small measure of rum each day. And so Thomas had a bottle. And so a junk bottle during that period was a quart size bottle, and somewhere Thomas had acquired a quart size bottle. So the plan was, we are going to save everyone's rum until we have a quart. And then, since two men are allowed up on deck at a time after dark, we will go up there and we will share our rum with the two guards who are on the deck and get them drunk. And it worked. And then hopefully they'll get so drunk they won't notice when we slip away into the water. And it worked perfectly. In fact, it worked so well, the guards were so drunk that a huge number of men escaped out of, it wasn't just a couple or a few, a great number of men were running across the deck and made too much noise and alerted the rest of the guards who were below, who all burst on deck and recaptured most of the men who were trying to escape. Thomas Painter, they scooped them out of the water because the prison ships were anchored close to each other. When there was a ruckus on the deck of the Good Hope, the boats from the other ships immediately went down in the water to capture escaping prisoners. So all the escaping prisoners were recaptured except for Thomas Painter, who escaped. And there is a great description of his, he wrote for his children, a great description of his escape, which has run in the Journal of the American Revolution.
Selden, how does this story lead into the greater narrative of the whaleboat wars that we all know so well?
Well, what's interesting to me is to watch the progression of whaleboat use during the war. You only find a couple of mentions of a whaleboat in Long Island Sound, in western Long Island Sound, in the New York City end of the Sound. You know, out toward New London, there's and Rhode Island, there's a lot more because whalers went out from those areas. But in, you know, nobody was whaling from Greenwich. However, what you see is starting at the end of 77, then the winter of 78, it seems as though everyone and his neighbor was building a whaleboat over the winter of 78, because in the spring of 78, whaleboats are mushrooming everywhere. It's discussed on both sides. Wow, there's a lot of whaleboats coming from Long Island. Gee, the whaleboats from Connecticut, you know, people on Long Island were saying, gee, the whaleboats from Connecticut are here almost every day. And you see it in ship's logs in the Sound. They're constantly talking about the whaleboats they see, you know, the rebel whaleboats. So it's just 78, 79, by 81, the raids are almost every night, every clear night. The only protection you had really from a whaleboat attack, especially if you were in the western Long Island Sound, your only safety was high wind and bad weather, because whaleboats couldn't go. That was, you know, they didn't have a covered deck. So high waves, you couldn't go. And you see all sorts of accounts of people having to cancel their planned raids because of bad weather and high winds. But on clear nights, there were pretty much daily by 1781 attacks on both sides. So I found it very interesting to watch the number of whaleboats multiply through those years. And this one in June of 1778 was a very early and sort of innocent, unwise attack. You get the feeling it was almost a lark.
How does this article help us understand the Revolutionary era better?
What I enjoy about this story is seeing that there were of course many planned battles and sort of well thought out attacks and raids, and then there were the guys that were just impulsive and that is a very human, I try to understand people of that era and this sort of, I want to say, silly episode that actually had tough consequences. They ended up in prison. I don't know. I taught a lot of as a school teacher. I knew a lot of very dear, impulsive young men, and that's what I it seemed like a familiar trope to me.
Selden West, thanks again.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
The music played in this episode included works by Kevin MacLeod and the Sturbridge Colonial Militia. Any unauthorized reproduction or use of this podcast without the express written permission of the Journal of the American Revolution is strictly prohibited. For everyone here at Dispatches, I'm Brady Kreitzer saying so long.